Hikatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Hikatra AI. Welcome back, everyone. If you've ever found yourself wondering about those completely out there hypothetical questions, like what would happen if you tried to hit a baseball moving at almost the speed of light?
Or maybe what if the Earth just stopped spinning?
Exactly. Well, today's deep dive is basically scientific validation for that kind of curiosity. We're jumping into Randall Munroe's fantastic book, What If? Serious Scientific Answers to Absurd Hypothetical Questions.
It really is the ultimate proof that physics isn't just equations on a blackboard. It's the best tool we have for exploring the craziest possibilities imaginable.
Mm-hmm.
So our mission today is to unpack how Munroe takes these absolutely ridiculous questions.
Like the light speed baseball.
Right. And uses rigorous, hard science to figure out what would actually happen. And spoiler alert, it's usually hilarious, educational, and often pretty catastrophic.
Yeah, that mix of the absurd and the scientifically accurate is just perfect.
Yep.
It totally blows up the idea that science has to be dry or boring.
Definitely.
It really shows the scientific method as this incredibly powerful and honestly fun way to look at the universe, even if the end result is complete scientific annihilation.
And the guy asking these questions, Randall Munroe, he's kind of perfectly positioned for this. He straddles two worlds, really.
How so?
Well, first, you've got the serious science cred, right? He's got a physics degree. He actually worked for NASA.
Oh, wow. NASA? Doing what?
Robotics and programming at the Langley Research Center. So, you know, he understands the math, the physics, the hard numbers behind things like orbital mechanics.
Okay, so he's genuinely got the background. A literal rocket scientist, almost.
Pretty much. But, and this is key, the reason millions of people actually read and trust his answers is because he's also the creator of XTCD.
The webcomic, yes.
Yeah.
Hugely popular. Those little stick figures.
Exactly. He describes it himself as mixing romance, sarcasm, math, and language. And he uses those, like, deceptively simple stick figures.
Which somehow makes the descriptions of planetary doom even funnier. It's that deadpan delivery.
That's his unique genius, I think. Fusing the mind of a NASA scientist with the quirky, funny voice of this cartoonist everyone loves. He makes really complex stuff. Special relativity, thermodynamics feel genuinely entertaining.
So where did the book actually come from? These weren't just questions he dreamed up himself, right?
No, that's the cool part. It started as a blog feature. Readers would send in these totally wild what-if questions.
Okay.
And the whole idea of the book is just taking those questions, the most absurd ones, and answering them. But not just guessing, using real scientific principles, doing the math, sometimes pretty complex calculations.
I love that it's not really a story with a beginning and end. It's more like a chaotic tour through scientific extremes.
That's a great way to put it. You start with something that sounds simple, maybe even silly. And then applying the science just leads you down this rabbit hole of, like, logical steps that often end in some kind of apocalypse. It's brilliant systems thinking, really.
Okay, so what's the bigger goal here, besides just exploring exploding planets? You mentioned calculations.
Right. I think the book is secretly a masterclass in something scientists call Fermi problems. Heard of those?
Vaguely. It's about estimation, isn't it? Like, how many piano tuners are in Chicago?
Exactly like that. It's the art of making reasonable estimates for things that seem impossible to know for sure. You break a huge, complex problem down into smaller, more manageable pieces you can estimate.
But hang on, if it's based on estimations and assumptions, how solid are the answers? Isn't that just, you know, sophisticated guessing?
It is educated guessing, absolutely. But, and this is Munroe's point, it's anchored in fundamental principles. You don't need to know the exact position of every atom. You need the laws of gravity, momentum, thermodynamics, the established rules. Munroe shows you how to build a framework of reasonable assumptions, apply those rules, and get surprisingly close answers, at least in terms of the order of magnitude. That skill, that framework, is the real lesson.
Gotcha. Okay, let's dive into some examples then, because that's where the horror and the humor really collide. We absolutely have to start with the classic, the relativistic baseball.
Yes. The baseball pitched at 90% of the speed of light.
What happens? My first thought is the bat just disintegrates, or something wild with relativity happens to the ball itself.
See, that's the intuition, but Munroe immediately says, forget the bat, forget the batter. They're basically irrelevant.
Really? Why?
Because the real action happens way before the ball gets anywhere near the plate. It's all about special relativity and the air.
The air?
Yeah. Think about it from the ball's point of view. It's hitting stationary air molecules at almost the speed of light. The energy involved is immense.
Okay. So what does that energy do?
It triggers thermonuclear fusion.
Why fusion?
In the air.
In the air molecules, yeah.
Okay. Instantly. So what you actually get is this rapidly expanding bubble of plasma superheated, releasing X-rays and gamma rays erupting outwards from the ball's path.
Before it even reaches the batter.
Long before.
Yeah.
The entire stadium, the surrounding neighborhood, it's all vaporized by this plasma fireball and the resulting shockwave. You end up with a massive crater. It's basically an atomic bomb detonated by air friction.
That's completely insane and utterly logical based on the physics. Wow.
That's the magic, right? Extreme physics applied.
Mm.
And speaking of extreme scale, let's pivot to something slightly different. A mole of moles.
Okay, a mole like the chemical unit, Avogadro's number.
Exactly. Yeah. 6.022 times 10 to the 23rd, but not of atoms. Of the little furry mammals.
Mole. Oh my God, that's a lot of moles. What's the mass?
That's the kicker. When you calculate the total mass of that many moles, it's roughly comparable to the mass of the moon.
You're kidding, a moon made of moles. Essentially, yes. And this is where planetary science kicks in. The sheer gravity of this mole moon would be immense. It would crush itself into a sphere.
Okay.
A sphere of, well, compressed biological matter. And the pressure at the core.
Don't tell me.
The pressure and the heat generated would be enough to create something Monroe describes with perfect scientific dryness as meat magma.
Meat magma. Oh, no. You need a second. A planetary core of molten mole. The calculations required for that are just mind-bending.
Right. It's brilliantly grotesque. And it leads nicely into another planetary scale disaster, the global windstorm.
Okay. What's the setup for this one?
Imagine the Earth, the solid planet, the ground, everything fixed to it suddenly stops spinning, just halts. But the atmosphere? It keeps going at the original speed.
Because of inertia. Okay, how fast is that?
Well, at the equator, the Earth's surface is moving at about 1,100 miles per hour. So suddenly you have air moving over stationary ground at supersonic speeds.
That's not wind. That's a planetary scale sandblaster.
Precisely. It would scour the surface clean. Buildings, trees, topsoil, people, everything just instantly flung into the air and shredded. Oceans, too.
And what about secondary effects? Fire.
Oh, definitely. The friction alone would cause global firestorms, and the oceans, without the outward centrifugal effect from the spin, would surge catastrophically towards the poles, flooding everything in their path. Just complete surface annihilation.
Wow. Okay, from total destruction, let's go to something that sounds like it should be destructive, but maybe isn't. Everybody jump.
Ah, yes. What if every single person on Earth gathered in one place, say, Rhode Island, and jumped at the exact same instant?
Does it knock the Earth off its axis?
That's the common question. But the answer comes down to conservation of momentum. Humanity's total mass, even all 8 billion of us, is absolutely minuscule compared to the Earth.
So nothing happens.
To the Earth, pretty much nothing. When everyone jumps, the Earth recoils by an amount smaller than the width of a single atom. Then when everyone lands, it moves back. The planet is, mathematically speaking, completely fine.
Well, that feels anticlimactic. Why is it even in the book, then?
Because Monroe pulls a brilliant switch. The real problem isn't the physics of the jump. It's the logistics.
Oh.
You've just put the entire human population into an area the size of Rhode Island. Instantly, you have the world's worst refugee crisis. No food, no water, no sanitation, no way to get people out. That's the catastrophe. The jump is irrelevant. The setup is the disaster.
That's clever. Okay, shifting gears completely. I love that he tackles culinary physics.
Yeah.
Steak drop.
Yes. From what height do you need to drop a steak so it's cooked when it hits the ground?
My guess would be friction, maybe, or impact energy.
Good instincts. It's mostly about thermodynamics and aerodynamics. And Monroe figures out it's not really the splat at the end that does the cooking. It's the journey down.
Like atmospheric reentry?
Exactly. It's the heat generated by atmospheric drag by compressing the air in front of it at incredible speeds. So how high?
Really high, I'm guessing.
Orbital height. You basically have to drop it from space.
Wow. Does it work? Is it like medium rare?
Sadly, no. The physics predicts it would get incredibly hot, seared to charcoal on the outside, but the heat wouldn't have time to penetrate. So burnt on the outside, completely raw inside.
Ugh.
And even worse, the hypersonic forces would likely just tear the steak apart long before it even landed. So no perfectly cooked space steak, unfortunately.
Tragic. Okay, one more scenario. This feels huge. Drain the oceans.
What if a portal, say 10 meters wide, opened at the bottom of the Mariana Trench, leading to, well, somewhere else, Mars maybe.
And all the ocean water just drains out. How long would that take?
Surprisingly long, according to Monroe's calculations. Because the pressure differential decreases as the water level drops, it would take hundreds of thousands of years.
Okay, slow.
Yeah.
But what are the consequences, besides ending up with a giant salty desert covering most of the planet?
This is where geology and Earth systems come in. The sheer weight of the oceans puts enormous pressure on the seafloor as that water drains away.
The pressure's released.
Exactly. It's like taking a giant weight off the Earth's crust. This decompression would trigger absolutely massive volcanic eruptions and earthquakes all over the planet, as magma chambers that were previously held in check are suddenly unburdened.
So you don't just lose the water, you trigger a global geological catastrophe.
You fundamentally rewrite the planet's geology and climate. It's another lesson in interconnectedness. You can't just change one massive thing without huge, unforeseen consequences rippling through the whole system.
Okay, so beyond just, you know, enjoying these tales of scientific doom, what are the bigger takeaways? You mentioned Fermi problems.
Yeah, I think the power of estimation is huge. Monroe really teaches you that back-of-the-envelope calculation skill.
How does that help in, like, everyday life?
Well, think about planning a big project, or even just a budget. Instead of getting overwhelmed by the huge numbers or complexity, you learn to break it down. Make reasonable assumptions, figure out the key factors, and get a ballpark answer. It's about building quantitative intuition.
Right, making big problems feel less scary. And the second theme seems to be those unintended consequences.
Absolutely. Systems thinking. Nothing happens in isolation. Draining the ocean doesn't just make the water go away. It triggers volcanoes. Pitching a baseball super fast doesn't just break the bat. It causes nuclear fusion in the air.
So thinking through the ripple effects.
Exactly. Thinking about the second order, third order effects of any decision. That's vital in business strategy, policymaking, even just personal choices.
And the third big thing has to be the humor as a vehicle for education.
Oh, definitely. Describing Armageddon with stick figures and a completely deadpan tone, it's genius.
Why do you think that works so well?
It just lowers your defenses, you know? If someone tries to lecture you about plasma physics, you might tune out. But if you're chuckling about meat magma,
right,
you're actually absorbing the concepts behind it. Avogadro's number, gravitational collapse without even realizing it. It makes intimidating science feel accessible and, crucially, memorable.
The book's also full of really quotable lines that kind of capture Monroe's whole approach.
Mm-hmm.
One that really stuck with me about why science doesn't always match our intuition is, "The universe is under no obligation to make sense to you."
Ooh, that's a good one. Yeah, it really emphasizes that we have to rely on observation and evidence, the empirical data, not just what feels right or reasonable in our heads. Reality follows its own rules.
And he talks about the motivation for doing science, too.
Mm.
I never trust anyone who's more excited about success than about doing the thing they want to be successful at.
Yeah, I love that. It's all about valuing the process, the inquiry, the actual doing of the science or the project, rather than just chasing the final prize or the recognition. It's about the joy of figuring things out.
He also has this great line, defending pure curiosity, talking about hypothetical cultures that made the sensible economic decision that there's no good reason to go into space.
Right. It's such a powerful jab at short-sighted practicality. It implies that this kind of seemingly irrational drive to explore, to ask what if, just for the sake of knowing, is actually fundamental to progress, maybe even to long-term survival.
So how can we, you know, take this Monroe mindset and apply it? What are the practical applications for us?
Well, first is definitely deconstruction and problem solving. See a huge, scary problem, don't freeze, break it down.
Like a Fermi problem.
Exactly. Break it into smaller, solvable pieces, use logic, make estimates. It works for engineering challenges, business plans, writing a big report, anything. It gives you a path forward.
Okay, what else?
Second, I'd say risk assessment and quantitative intuition. Understanding the sheer scale of things, like in the radiation examples he sometimes uses, helps you evaluate risks better.
How so?
You learn to look at the actual physics or the numbers behind a risk rather than just reacting to how scary it sounds in the news. Is this a huge immediate danger or a tiny probability event? Thinking quantitatively helps you differentiate.
That makes sense, putting risks in perspective.
And the third application, maybe the biggest, is just cultivating lifelong curiosity. The book inspires you to keep asking, what if?
Mm-hmm.
To look at the world around you, even the mundane stuff, and apply that analytical, scientific mindset. Turn everyday life into a series of interesting problems to solve.
So, final thoughts. What was the biggest surprise or takeaway for you from revisiting the book?
For me, it was being reminded of the sheer power of that Fermi estimation approach. Just how far you can get with logical thinking, basic physics, and the willingness to make reasonable guesses. You don't always need supercomputers. Sometimes you just need a good framework for thinking. That and Meat Magma. Can't forget that.
Yeah, Meat Magma is definitely seared into my brain now.
Yeah.
For me, I think it was the emphasis on the process. The journey to the answer, exploring all the weird tangents and cascading effects, often feels more enlightening and fun than the final answer itself. It's the joy of the intellectual chase.
Well said.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.